This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome into the Lions 24-7 podcast. I am Tyler Donahue. Daniel Callen, my colleague at Lions 24-7, going to be hopping on with us in just a moment. We've got a lot to look at here. We're fresh out of a great event that took place on Penn State's practice field on Wednesday afternoon. We were fortunate to get out there and regroup with a huge, significant portion of the roster, the class of 2021. Not a large class overall, but as things have gone on, their importance pretty vital for what Penn State wants to do with their 2022 plan. Several guys who are jockeying for starting positions, others who are emerging as risers, and then guys that we just really haven't had a chance to see much in the last year or so. The way Penn State operates is when they get their players on campus as freshmen enrollees, they're not available to the media during that freshman year. So over the course of the winter conditioning, spring ball last year, preseason camp, the entire season itself, those first-year players were not available to us to speak to the media. And I believe Landon Tengwall, Christian Veiu, their last media availability or media appearances may have been on this podcast just a couple of days before they enrolled a couple winters ago. So got to regroup with those guys. Daniel Gowan was out there on the field. We've got some recruiting stuff to get to a little bit later before we sign off. But let's start here. Daniel Gowan hopping on with us on the Lions 24-7 podcast. And Daniel, beautiful day out there on the Penn State practice facility, out there in the field, construction underway. I know a lot of people are excited what's happening over there at Lash. And we're excited whenever we get a chance to actually get face-to-face with players, young players at that. A lot of these guys, many in the media haven't spoken with much of, because last time we really saw several of them in a uniform during game days, they were with their high schools. We're going to get to a lot there in a second, but also surfacing just before we headed over to team facilities yesterday, things are now set in stone for that Auburn matchup as Penn State heads on the road week three in September.
Yeah, Penn State Auburn is going to get that coveted 3:30 p.m. Eastern slot on CBS, 2:30 p.m. Central Time, which I'm sure at Jordan-Hare Stadium in Auburn, Alabama in mid-September, I'm sure it's going to be a hot day, a little soupy out there. But 3:30 p.m. on CBS, I think that it's a game that a lot of people have excitement for, and I think that this kind of adds another element to it. Getting that nationally televised slot, there's going to be plenty of eyes on that game. And I think in these marquee non-conference games, that's what you want.
I think a couple of fan bases that entered this season with a little trepidation, obviously the leadership's in a different spot with James Franklin having this long-term contract nailed in, and down in Auburn, it was felt like it might be a one-and-done situation for their coaching staff. But I think overall it's early enough where both fan bases, particularly if Penn State can get through that Purdue matchup on the road, where a little bit of a litmus test outside of the conference, I think, between these two squads. Last year when they entered the matchup, both inside the top 25, relatively early in the season as well, I think there was a lot of hope, and neither team ultimately ended the year the way they wanted to. So I think both have a lot to prove. And if someone takes the other to the woodshed that day, it's going to be a really, really rough moment, I think, for that program, because they're going to be creeping towards conference play and having that big blemish on their record in a national spotlight setting. On the flip side, Penn State can avoid that kind of a scenario where they suffer that loss and they go able to go pick up a win. They can do so while being projected in a lot of different living rooms, a lot of different eyeballs on that matchup that maybe would normally be inclined to turn on a Big Ten game or a Penn State game. So a lot to gain there for the Nittany Lions early in the season.
Yeah, it feels kind of similar to last year in terms of what this could mean early in the season. Penn State got by Wisconsin earlier to open the season and then was able to back up a Big Ten win with an SEC win. And they'll have the opportunity to do that again here. But of course, as both Auburn and Penn State showed last year, how things look in November can be a lot different than how they look in September. And I think both of these programs are definitely going to be looking at ending their 2022 2022 seasons a lot differently than 2021 ended.
I know you were actually on with the 24/7 Sports Auburn podcast earlier today on a Thursday talking about that matchup a little bit. It's one that we'll be looking at a lot in the summer months, creeping up towards September. Elsewhere, though, of course, we had a lot going on Wednesday here in Happy Valley. And we're going to dive right into it because it was a chance to not just, you know, get with these guys and get to know them about where they are as players, but I think you saw some personalities shine through. Guys have changed a little bit, maybe from where they were in high school, a little bit more open, more willing to talk about certain things. Not everybody across the board, but let's start out with the freshman who commanded the most attention on campus around this time last year. Kalen King came out of spring ball in 2021, clearly as the ascending guy. He ended up burning his redshirt status, one of only two freshmen to do that. Now he wants to be that starting cornerback opposite of Joey Porter Jr. What stood out to you as you were the guy with the mic? We split up duties here, and so we're kind of going to lean on each other for this segment.
Yeah, and I'll say overall, this was a really good exercise for me because I wasn't on the beat during all these guys' recruitments, so I didn't get the chance to get to know these guys when they were juniors and seniors, and you know, to me, they mostly kind of existed, mostly behind the scenes last year, so it was really good to put some names with the faces, put voices with those names and faces, and I think Kalen King was someone that a lot of people wanted to talk to. I mean, we've been hearing about him for more than a year at this point, and this is the first time we got to talk to him wearing a Penn State uniform. I think the big thing that stood out to me in talking to him is that it dovetails with what Terry Smith talked about earlier this year in terms of a mature approach that he took. And Kalen King talked about that the big thing that he learned over the past year was all of the details kind of mattering. And I think that the one thing that stood out to me, the specific example he gave was that when he was in high school and he was playing cornerback, he didn't have to think too much about the down and distance, that it was kind of, you know, you do the same thing play after play. I think a little less situational, but in college football, everything is so situational that the, you know, the difference of a couple yards can change a scenario. And I think that he said that was something that he had to learn about too. And about midway through last year, he said that he kind of hit his stride. Things started to click. Like you said, he was one of only two freshmen to burn his redshirt last year. And he was the only freshman to appear in all 13 games. So he's someone that I think that he said that he, you know, he didn't meet his expectations last year, and his expectations this year are to win a lot of games and to have fun. But, you know, he did say that he wants to start. He wants to have that opportunity. And I think he's in a good position for that.
I think even though he did play in 13 games as a freshman, because of the buzz that was generated when James Franklin is publicly stating things the way he was last April about Kalen King and his early progression and kind of how far ahead he was of the curve compared to freshmen going back to 2014 with Franklin here, it really set the stage for people to say, okay, he's going to go out and have, what, 3, 4, 5 interceptions as a freshman, will be over the field. And then you kind of remember, oh, wait, that is a hell of a position group on this roster in 2021. Now it's changed a little bit, but you had Johnny Dixon coming in as a transfer, and he was a factor there. And I, you know, just the fact that Kalen King was able to step up and be that kind of two-deep contributor with Daquan Hardy, obviously, up in the slot coverage. I think with Kalen King, you know, it'll be interesting to see if he's paired up with his brother in the starting lineup, because Kobe King was also available. This is a guy who did not burn his redshirt. We thought he would against Arkansas. He was at that 4-game threshold. He was asked about that, which I guess you can address here. But I think overall, Kobe King, we heard from Tyler Elston during a media availability in April. Those are the two guys at the forefront to replace Ellis Brooks as the starting Mike linebacker for Penn State.
Yeah, the redshirt conversation was pretty interesting. I know that when we were in Tampa, that kind of ruffled some feathers, especially in relation to the opt-outs and kind of the roster situation that Penn State was in. But Kobe King said that he talked about it with James Franklin, and that, you know, James Franklin came to the decision that it was the best decision, best choice for Kobe King to keep that redshirt moving forward. And I think that when you look at that position and being able to keep that year of eligibility in terms of his development, I think that's really good for the long term. But he's someone that I think that whether he wins that Mike linebacker job over Tyler Elsden, I think that Kobe King is someone that we're going to see a lot of. He said that he played the will last year, so he has kind of the versatility and flexibility to play multiple positions in the defense. He said that the transition from Brent Pry to Manny Diaz hasn't been too difficult, and that I think that he thinks that he'll be able to play a little bit faster this year in Manny Diaz's defense and just kind of being a second year college player. So, you know, I think that both King brothers have some pretty good personalities. They smiling, laughing. And I think that you can kind of see last year, Kobe King was someone too that got mentioned as someone who was pretty far along. I think that both of their intangibles were kind of highlighted here and there. And I think that kind of showed through in that interview setting.
Yeah, credit to those young men, credit to the Castech coaching staff, because they came in and the word you kept hearing was maturity. And that was the physical approach. That was the mental approach. That was the day to day, what it's like at this level of college football and everything that entails. It's not just go out and play football and be good at football. There's a lot that if you want to get on the field there at Penn State, there's more that's into it. And they were bought in from the get. And we've heard, I'm curious, because it was your first time interacting with these guys. One thing we've heard about Kobe in particular, going back his recruitment, we heard it from Terry Smith on signing day when these guys joined the class officially, was that future captain material. You got a chance to talk with Kobe King. He's got a lot more games to log and tackles to make before he's selected as a team captain. But do you pick up on those kind of vibes, because you hadn't really interacted with him before?
Yeah, definitely. I think that there is kind of a quiet confidence and a laid back manner to him. But not necessarily in a passive way. I thought that it was laid back in kind of a thoughtful way, really considering the questions and kind of, you could see him, thinking about what he wanted to say as he said it. And, I thought that he kind of delivered everything he was trying to say. So I thought that that was interesting. And you can definitely see kind of that captain potential there, just kind of in the way that he carries himself. And yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if, two, three, even one, depending on how things go, that he's someone who in August we hear getting the captaincy.
He was one of two freshman linebackers last year who ended up finishing right on that 4-game threshold, preserving redshirt. Neither of them played in the Outback Bowl. The other, of course, Jamari Budden. A lot of focus on what Jonathan Sutherland is going to do as a starting linebacker here as a 6-year senior after making that full transition from the safety spot. But Jamari Budden's a name that a lot of people have been poking around about this offseason. They want to know more about his development, and we got face to face with him. Well, you did. We put you on the Detroit area beat because he's also out of that city. So tell us with Jamari Budden, kind of what stood out. And I know he's a guy that was just ferocious in the way he approached the game as a senior in high school at Belleville.
Yeah, he, I asked him about in the blue white game. We saw him at both outside linebacker spots, moving around the defense. And he said that he thinks he has the flexibility to play both spots, the Sam and the Will. Kobe King described him as a rangy linebacker with kind of the athleticism to make some plays in space. But one thing that I asked some of these guys who redshirted last year about was whether it was difficult at all for them to kind of have to sit that first year. Obviously, as seniors in high school, they're the guy, they're the star. Everything on their team runs through them. And then coming to college, you kind of have to make that transition. And all of them said that it was pretty easy for them to kind of take the step back they kind of knew what they were there to do. And Jamari Budden was no different. He gave a lot of credit to Ellis Brooks and Jesse Lucchetta as two guys that he had the opportunity to watch and sit behind. And he said that kind of looking at the consistency and the hard work that he saw from them, how they carried themselves around the facility, and the fact that those are two guys who are in the NFL now, are on NFL rosters, kind of helped provide a bit of a blueprint on, why he's at Penn State, what he's trying to accomplish, and kind of the roadmap that he can follow to get there.
You talked about guys taking a step back last year. How about some guys who didn't have a senior season because of COVID? And I spoke with a couple of them who are really some of the more marquee names from this group at this stage in their career. That's Christian Veilleux, the quarterback, and of course, offensive lineman Landon Tangwall, top-rated member of this 2021 recruiting class. Took him a while to get involved in game action late last year, but ultimately he got some run. We saw quite a bit of Tangwall over at the guard spot. We saw some of him at tackle as a freshman, and now really locked in trying to land that left guard starting position. By the way, had a gash kind of on his face. I know some people were asking about that. We have some video content, some photo content up at lions247.com. I love the way he responded because he was asked a few times about it. He said, we don't talk about injuries, but he said the fact that he's showing his face with that kind of a gash suggests he's okay. But again, Landon Tangwall may be the kind of guy who go off, climb Mount Nittany, try to find a bear, wrestle it down, and then head back to practice. So I'm just going to speculate on that one for a while. But Landon Tangwall didn't have a senior season because COVID wiped it out. Last year he shows up, a guy who was really in a lot of ways because of some personal training that he had and going back really his entire high school career, really built to show up to campus and try to compete and push for a role. It ultimately didn't get on the field. It was Eric Wilson starting up at guard, and you saw at the tackle position, Rasheed Walker entrenched there and Caden Wallace on the right side, and Bryce Effner was the plan B for much of the season before he was unavailable. And I think right now when you kind of look at how much can the ceiling rise for Penn State is, well, can Landon Tangwall, who by the way looks the part right now and every bit of that you'd asked for with a former blue chip kind of guy and a guy that you project maybe being a high level NFL prospect, he's right where you'd want to possibly see him here in year two. If he can go out and be the kind of player that we've been talking about him being, and I think he's very confident that he is that guy and he's going to be him right now, you're talking about a stalwart on the left side of your line. I really like what Olu Fashanu can bring. Will he be better than Rasheed Walker from day one? Will he be as good as Rasheed Walker from day one? We don't know. We won't know. And we got to get through September before we can really start to credit Olu Fashanu with being that, you know, that next big time left tackle that Penn State's looking for. But I love the way it's coming together on the left side of the line. Landon, Olu have really good chemistry at this point as well. They were able to build a lot of that last December. And I think what Tangwall seems to be really encouraged by right now is just the fact that he says he now knows what he didn't know when he showed up to campus. And this is a guy who knew a lot. And so for him to say he kind of was in the deep end and thrown in the deep end last spring and had to play catch up, that speaks volumes, because I've really not encountered many offensive linemen who, from a technical standpoint, have done as much as they possibly could to put themselves in a position to show up on a campus and be ready for it. But he also said, you know, got the carpet pulled out from underneath him when you took all of his senior year away. And, you know, he's showing up now into preseason camp, 2 years removed from really getting that extensive game action.
Yeah, I think that's kind of an element that the further we get away from it, we kind of forget a little bit that these guys, some of these guys didn't have that 2020 season. And then you redshirt for a year, that's a lot of time between reps. And obviously, Penn State likes to talk about, practice being really competitive, that it's good on good. We heard some of the freshmen talk about getting thrown in the deep end with some juniors and seniors in that situation. But you can't replace the game reps. And I think that the fact that we saw Tangwall acquit himself well late in the season when he got kind of forced into action there, I think that bodes well. And I also think that it bodes well for the quarterback, Christian Veilleux, who I know that you talked to for a while. And, I'm very curious as to what your impression of him was and kind of how he talked about, I guess, navigating that situation for himself.
Yeah, again, these were two guys in Landon and Christian who we were fortunate enough to have on the podcast just within 48, 72 hours of them packing up and moving to campus in January of 2021. So, you know, still kind of, you know, the personalities haven't changed all that much. I think the motivation is still in place with Christian. We were talking to him before he enrolled, and that was before Drew Aller's recruitment took off. So a big question was, you know, how is he handling the arrival of those two freshmen, particularly the guy who was evaluated by our site as the number one quarterback in the country, and says, hey, you come to a program like Penn State, you should expect the next class to feature some studs. And they did a really good job following up, and they're trying to stack another class with a top 24/7 talent in Marcus Stokes. But I think there is such an interesting thing here because Christian Veilleux, helped by the fact that he enrolled in January, has really been forced to grow up pretty quick. He's got Sean Clifford, which is a great kind of buffer for him and a sounding board for him. And it sounds like he's hanging out with the Clifford brothers and kind of an extension of the Clifford brothers right now away from team facilities. And I think that's been really beneficial to his growth as a prospect, especially since he didn't have those game reps as a senior, being able to watch how Sean Clifford handles himself and you know, say what you will about Sean Clifford's game by game performance. He is a guy who is bought in at trying to get the offense where it needs to go. And he's putting in that kind of effort. So Christian Veiu, kind of same beat of the drum in that regard. I think where he needs to answer some bells still is, when he gets in crunch time moments. We have no idea what that's going to look like. There were some dicey moments against Rutgers. There's no doubt about it, especially when you were down like 20% of your roster. But really, Rutgers didn't do much to threaten you and make you feel scared at any point in that game. So by the time he was involved against Arkansas, things had really gone awry for the offensive plan. It felt like that game was away. It was hard to really judge that. So I don't know when we're going to see it. I think if things go according to plan for Mike Yurcich, you won't see, you know, Christian Veiu, you know, handling an early 2-minute drill late in the game in September, because he hopes Sean Clifford is healthy and available and performing well. But that's the next step in learning about Christian Veiu. But within everything he can control, I think he's answered the bells. He's stepped up. He's added about 12 pounds to his frame. 6'4", he'll probably enter the season over 210 pounds. Meanwhile, his 40-yard dash time is dropping from, you know, mid 4.7 range down to 4.6. He's trying to get into the 4.5s maybe there. So this kid has some wheels. He flashed a little bit of that against Rutgers. But I think he wants to really be able to lean on his ability as a passer. And I've continued to say it. Maybe the most overlooked guy on the roster at this point because of what they brought in this past year and how much of a lightning rod the guy ahead of him is and Sean Clifford. But here's the stance at quarterback. You got a 6-year senior. No matter what happens this year, this is the finale for Sean Clifford. You got three guys with freshman ineligibility trying to do everything they can right now to be next man up behind Sean Clifford going into the season and be next man up when Sean Clifford gets out of campus next winter.
Yeah, it's a really interesting picture there. And I think that what we've heard about Christian's demeanor, I think makes him very well suited for it too. I think that a lot of guys in the spring would refer to him as kind of the cool, calm, collected. Harrison Wallace said that Christian is very cool and humble. And I think the way that Wallace described him is that he knows how he wants to be, and there's a way that he wants to be as a player. And that's kind of what he's working towards, that he has a very, I think, distinct goal in mind, and that's kind of what everything is pointing to for him.
One thing else I wanted to address with Veiu, he does seem to be kind of ascending into a leadership role. Your ceiling is going to be capped in that growth when you have Sean Clifford in your position room because of the presence that he is on this roster for this program right now. But it's good to see QB2, at least for now, QB2, developing that kind of sense. They've had that in the past. They lacked it last year at this time, and kind of having a presence beyond the starting position. I think right now they have a presence at least too deep right now at quarterback. We'll see how Drew and Bo come along in August. And by the way, from a leadership perspective, I'm also really curious to see, assuming he starts accruing some game reps and some starts, what Landon Tangwall can maybe do to the culture in that offensive line room. I don't think he's going to blow it up and reinvent the wheel or anything, but a Phil Troutwine, you know, this was reinforced by Landon Tangwall. He's a relatively soft-spoken guy. When he wants to get his message across, he explains it, he takes his time, and he speaks it. He doesn't yell it, and Tangwall says he loves that approach, but I think you talk about Olufashanu, Caden Wallace, Juice Scruggs, all these guys. You hear the strides are being made, but I think when you ask people about their personalities, it's more lead by example. It's more they will step up and speak when they need to. Landon Tangwall has a lot of innate traits that he's the guy when the going gets rough on the sideline during practice. Maybe he says some things that are uncomfortable, and maybe he owns it and he lives with it, but some things that need to be said. I don't know if they'll get to that point, and I don't know if they've gotten to that point. He's somebody, though, I circle, and I don't know personality of Hunter Norzad at this point, who just came in from Cornell. But he's a little bit of a different demeanor, and that's really been the case with him since Penn State offered him as a freshman in high school.
Yeah, I think that's definitely an element to watch. I mean, I don't think you would necessarily describe the personalities of Juice Scruggs or Caden Wallace, or even the limited time we've had with Olu as kind of the alpha, I guess, in the room. And I think that if Tangwall can bring that, I think that would kind of be a good addition, maybe bring some of that kind of nasty edge that you hear guys talk about how they want to play up front. And I think that he's someone who Even though he's only a redshirt freshman, still really young, there's a really big opportunity for him this year to really assert himself and make his imprint on this offensive line and on this team.
Again, we got some video up that includes Tengwall. If you want to see that lovely face for yourself, again, credit to him for showing up. And he's always great to deal with. I hope we get Landon Tengwall 5 times a year moving forward for the rest of his Penn State career for media access. But Daniel, I just want to reiterate, we're not going to get to it all here on the show, but we've been trying to, as you and I and Mark go through content for stories we're working on and different content pieces, dropping as many notes from the event on Wednesday as we possibly can over at Lions247.com on Lions Pride message board. We've got a thread going there. If you have some questions about this group, we'll be happy to chime in there with our subscribers. But let's continue the conversation here with the wide receiver unit. We just talked about offensive line, a lot of conversation there. There's less pressing, there's less pressure on the wide receiver room to produce new contributors right now. You got Mitchell Tinsley coming in. It kind of helps you out, buys you some time for some younger talent. Malik Mega a year ahead of these players. But Harrison Wallace, to me, I'm kind of bunching him up with Mega in that there's so much athleticism in play here where it doesn't need to come all together for you. If it can come like 70% of the way in year two, you could really go out there and do some damage with this offense.
Yeah, he kind of teased it in the blue-white game or scrimmage a little bit where he had that jump ball in the end zone that he pulled in. When he was asked for kind of the scouting report on himself yesterday, he said that he's fast, he's a jump ball catcher, he's a deep threat, but he can also catch the slants, catch the digs, go over the middle, kind of do whatever he needs to in the offense. And he was kind of someone who was interesting to talk to about his physical development, because when he came in, we all saw the basketball highlights. He can jump out of a gym. We saw kind of the raw skills that's there, and it's kind of the development and the refinement. I think that he said he's up about 10 pounds to about, I think, around 195. He said he was timed in the 40 a couple weeks ago and ran a 4.4, which with Jahan Dotson leaving, you need to get more speed onto the field. And I think Wallace is someone who can do that. So I think that he's someone who was, he was pretty soft-spoken, but I think that you could kind of see the focus that's there. And even though Mitchell Tinsley came in, even though Parker Washington and Keandre Lambert Smith are back, I think that he knows that there's kind of an opportunity for him to get onto the field, that to kind of make this wide receiver rotation a little deeper, because last year it didn't really go beyond those top three. But with Tinsley in the mix, Mega potentially taking a step forward, and now Wallace, maybe we can see more variety on the field at wide receiver.
Yeah, the last couple of seasons, we've definitely seen the more spreading of volume of production, of big playability across that starting unit for the receiver group. But when you got to go beyond that, it has not been there. And I think James Franklin alluded to that as much coming out of spring ball at the blue-white game press conference and said they really feel like they're in a position to construct a two deep in a way they have not been able to do at receiver. We'll see how Liam Clifford is going to factor into that competition. He's a guy that remains very physically impressive. You got to look at him last year, and that's no surprise considering he's a professional trainer now with his brother, and that's part of their business plan. He's got a lot going on with the NIL business, Limitless with his brother, which is really cool for them to be doing. But I know he wants to catch a pass in the game from Sean, and that is something that he's always wanted to do. They didn't think it would ever be possible. He was in eighth grade when Sean Clifford was leading St. Xavier to a championship as a senior. And then by the time Liam Clifford was breaking records at St. Xavier as a receiver, Sean was supposed to be moving on. And of course, COVID rolls into town. Everyone gets this extra eligibility. Somewhat surprisingly, Sean Clifford seizes it. And now here they are in a position to maybe make something happen in Beaver Stadium. But I think, Sean's always been pretty hesitant when I bring up Liam, and I've done it a few times the last couple of years. I think he wants to try to treat him as best he can with all the other receivers. He's got to pay his dues. He's got to work in that rotation. And thus far, coming out of spring ball, I still think you're waiting for a little bit more buzz on Liam Clifford, maybe being the guy who's going to push for that rotational role. But there's a lot of names there. He's another one of them. Getting into this phase of our conversation coming out of Wednesday, we're kind of into the portion of the roster that maybe we don't expect a lot of game reps coming in 2022, or maybe a lot of game impact coming this fall. But moving forward, there's intrigue. And I'm going to stay on the offensive side of the football and go over to Khalil Dinkins, who I had a chance to chat with one-on-one for a while. There were crowds around certain guys, and as you'd expect, the quarterback drew a crowd, and the guys who were expected to maybe be starting this year drew a crowd. And Khalil Dinkins, right now, you've got to peg as the number four tight end. So kind of standing over there by himself, and it was a good chance to pick his brain a little bit. And something that came up really early in that, Daniel, was where he was at with his position stance, because big topic of conversation when he was a recruit and a guy who was pegged as a four-star prospect by 24/7 Sports was, where do you want to put him on the football field? How is he going to help your roster most over the course of a four-year span? And he talked about his recruitment, coaching staffs mentioning receiver, mentioning tight end, defensive end, linebacker, even one that talked about him playing safety in their system. And receiver for him was always the top of that priority list. And I think when Mother Nature said, tight end's probably going to be where you want if you want to be a pass target. He wasn't really given an opportunity and presented that chance because of the offensive structure, because that kind of the way he was utilized in different roles to go out and be a highly productive pass target at the high school level. It's an asset of his game, though, that I am really, really compelled by, because he's added about 20 plus pounds. I think he's pushing towards 240 pounds. He showed up last year at 215 pounds. He's a 6'4" guy. But he's also dropped that 40 time. I don't know if there was a technical issue with his 40-yard dash last year, but he told me yesterday that he was at 4.9 in the 40-yard dash when he got to campus last year as a freshman. Again, at about 215 pounds, now 235, 240-pound range. He said that's now dropped into the 4.6s. So I think that's something that nicely gotten cleaned up. This is a guy with NFL pedigree because of his father. And he's someone who has played all over the field. And it doesn't sound like the door is closed on maybe that versatility still being in play. John Scott, apparently, every once in a while will tell him, come to the dark side. And I'm sure John Scott would love to add to that defensive end haul. And maybe that is still something that happens here. He's got 4 years of eligibility. He's a redshirt freshman right now. But clearly, he's committed to trying to become a great tight end at a room where the standard is very high. There's not a lot of pressure on his shoulders right now to produce a tight end. But I think it's a big year for Khalil Dinkins and for the Penn State coaching staff to figure out where is the ideal spot for this young man to grow and cultivate and put himself in a position to launch a professional career in the sport.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting that he is in that position group where he's still the number four tight end. There's all this potential that he has. Physically, he's very impressive. I mean, that entire room at this point is very physically impressive. And I think that it's, you know, he's going to get another chance to kind of, you know, feel things out. It'll be interesting to see if he can get onto the field in some of these non-conference games, if they can kind of maybe carve out some, you know, a role for him, whether it's special teams or, you know, somewhere on the offense. But, you know, kind of it was really interesting talking to you after it, and kind of the fact that he was recruited at so many positions. He has that versatility, and you know, I think that it's good that the Penn State coaching staff is still kind of, you know, looking at, all right, where might we be able to utilize him? What could really be his best position? You know, I think that a lot of these guys, they want to have the ball in their hands, and he seems like someone who is really looking forward to that opportunity.
We'll be right back on the Lions 24/7 podcast.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Someone else who we just really kind of been out of sight, out of mind is maybe the best way to put it since they enrolled. You know, Dinkins isn't a guy that we've kind of spotlighted much at all since he got to campus because of what's going on at the position. Similarly, at cornerback, it's been a very deep group. Nothing's really changed in that department here in 2022. And Jeffrey Davis is there trying to work his way up the ladder.
Yeah, I chatted with him for a little bit at the end of the session, and he gave some insight on some of the other cornerbacks in the room. I talked to him for a while about Zaki Wheatley on kind of what he brings. But I think the one thing I talked to Jeffrey Davis about, I kind of asked him, you know, what do you bring to this cornerback room that might be unique? Because, you know, Joey Porter Jr. has the length. Daquan Hardy, despite the size, is able to play tough on the inside at the nickel. Kalen King, I think, has a lot of those intangibles, has that mental approach along with the physical skills. But Jeffrey Davis Jr. said that he thinks that his speed is something that can be utilized in the secondary and something that he thinks can help him at the next level. And obviously he said that going up against Jahan Dotson during practice last year, having to go up against Keandre Lambert-Smith and Parker Washington and now Mitchell Tinsley on a regular basis is something that has kind of helped his development come along. But he said that he feels really comfortable, that he's kind of made the adjustment, and that he's kind of looking forward to kind of seeing where he can fit in on this defense moving forward.
Davis was a top 40 cornerback in the 2021 class per 24/7 Sports evaluation. And boy, am I glad you brought up Zaki Wheatley, because I didn't, and I almost skimmed right over the safety group, which is a pretty important one because they need a new starter. They've got this spring ball standout, and they've got the second player who burned his red shirt last year in Jalen Reed. So you got both those guys. You were all over the defensive backfield on Wednesday, clearly. Zaki Wheatley, let's start there, and then tell us what you heard from Jalen Reed, who, because of what Wheatley was able to do this spring, kind of put him and Keaton Ellis on the back burner for a lot of people, I think.
Yeah, I think Mark got Jalen Reed. I didn't make it over to him because I was talking to Zaki Wheatley. Got to spend some time with the takeaway king. But obviously a lot of the conversation with Zaki Wheatley centered around those ball skills and his ability to kind of come up with the ball. He said that over the course of the spring, he didn't really realize how many interceptions he had. He wasn't necessarily paying attention to that, but it did kind of feel different. He did feel like he was making plays. He did feel like he was where he was supposed to be more often. And I think that comes with the development. He credited some of the ball skills, I think, similar to a conversation we had with Jair Brown last fall. About playing center field on the baseball field. Zaki Wheatley said he played baseball until his sophomore year of high school, center fielder, tracking the ball, and he played wide receiver for his whole life too. And he said when the ball's in the air, he stops thinking about whether he's playing offense or defense, that the only goal is to come down with the ball. And I think that it sounds like that's something that really showed through this spring. I asked Jeffrey Davis about it, and he obviously said the ball skills are amazing, and that Zaki Wheatley was making plays that he'd never seen made before. And I kind of asked him what specifically about it, and he said that the body control and the ability to kind of contort his body to get to the ball is something that is what is helping Zaki Wheatley come down with these interceptions. And you look at him physically, I mean, he's long. He's listed at 6'2". I'm only 5'9", but I kind of have a gauge for some of these things, and he feels a little bit taller than 6'2" at this point. And it'll be interesting to see kind of how he continues to grow, how he continues to fill out as he goes forward, because he's still a young player. He likes to play physical. I think he said that he needs to put on a little bit more weight because, you know, playing safety, you dish out a couple more hits than you might do as playing cornerback. But he's someone who seems really confident and is really looking forward to his opportunity to, you know, really work into the safety rotation.
I feel like him and Joey Porter Jr. both have those go gadget arms where it's like, wow, they can, all of a sudden they're getting their ball, even a fingertip on the ball, and being able to disrupt a potential big play. They can cover a lot of ground just with their bodies. And you're right, that ability to contort and still be able to utilize those things, big deal. And by the way, KJ Winston coming into campus next month is another guy who just has those long limbs he's going to be bringing into the defensive backfield. We'll see where he ends up. Sorry about putting you on the spot with Jalen Reed. As I said, we covered a lot of ground. Mark Brennan obviously did some of the work as well, and he was dropping notes up on the message board at lions247.com. A couple more names I wanted to get to were on the defensive line, but I know you've got one more in your back pocket, and that's Davon Townley. He was a late addition to the 2021 recruiting class, a guy who really came on for a lot of Big Ten programs down the stretch of that cycle, basketball kind of convert that was early on still in his development as a football player. I know personally seeing him on the practice field a bit this spring, he's someone that kind of popped out in terms of their physical development. What do you think standing toe-to-toe with him and getting some time to talk about his progress?
Yeah, I mean, standing next to him, he's definitely a big, long defensive end. He said that he's put on about 30 pounds, that he got to campus at 235. He weighs 260. He's around 265 now. I think the official roster has him at 268. So anytime someone's putting on that kind of weight, that kind of mass, I mean, it's a change. And he said that he's just being really patient with it, that he knows that when you're putting on this much muscle, when your body's changing this much, that it's not going to happen overnight, that he knows that the speed will come, that the strength will come, and that he'll be able to kind of put it all together. He did say that making the adjustment to college was a little bit difficult. He said that there was a lot to get used to with coming to Penn State. He said that, you know, being away from his mom was the biggest adjustment that he had to make. And, you know, over time, he's just kind of gotten used to it. You know, he didn't necessarily, you know, he does have an opportunity at defensive end, depending on where he is in his development. But I think that he's someone who kind of knows that he has a lot of work to do. He needs to do a lot of work, and eventually he'll get to the point where he can maybe become a contributor, get into the rotation. But I think physically he's very impressive. And I think that him and Rodney McGraw, seeing them standing on the field, you know, if you can get these guys, you know, at some point this year, maybe next year, another year of development onto the edge, you can have some, you know, a really, I guess, difficult pass rush for opposing offenses to deal with.
Yeah, and of course, the name that looms in all of this kind of conversation is Denai Dennis Sutton, who was on the podcast last week and will be on campus in just a few weeks and going to try to throw his hat in the ring there at defensive end. He's a five-star talent for a reason. But Rodney McGraw was a guy that I was I'll tell you what, if there was one conversation I walked away saying I didn't expect to have that conversation, it was with Rodney McGraw, because he's a guy I didn't get to know too well during his recruitment process. And yesterday, really, he was in a place personally to open up a little bit about a few things, about why Penn State was the right choice for him, about some challenges in his life. And he really opened up particularly about having a son before his sophomore year of high school. And it really wasn't a conversation that I had ever had with Rodney McGraw or anyone close with him, and, you know, trying to even fathom what that must be like at that age. I think he was 15 years old, just about to be 16 years old. This is still, you know, still something where he's a new father. And he said that's been the biggest challenge for him, is being away. You know, he's able to see his son occasionally in person, but it's daily FaceTimes. You know, this isn't the first time I've come across a Penn State player who is a father. But when you hear it from someone who's just a redshirt freshman, and he kind of just, we're so focused on, can these guys put it together as athletes? You don't think, can they put it together as people at, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old at this point? And in McGraw's case, I think he just turned 20 years old. And of course, at 6'5", 270 pounds, you know, I'll go down that road in a second. He says athletically, he is in a far different place than last year. He admitted that he didn't really know how to move laterally and the way that he needed to have success on the practice field, much less in game situations at this level of football. Got away a lot, I think, on just pure strength and just being able to outclass guys as an athlete at the high school level in Indiana. But he looked back on his decision to flip from the Indiana Hoosiers and join this Penn State recruiting class as a vital one for him. He said he needed a change of scenery. Obviously, he's got ties back home in Indiana. It's still an important place for him. I know he's excited to get back there for the Purdue game in September, but he says this was the best decision of his life. And he says he's had some heart-to-heart conversations with James Franklin about what he's doing right now and basically communicating with his son via FaceTime while trying to carve out this path as a student and as an athlete at Penn State. And Franklin is, you know, trying to make it clear to him, and he feels like he is on board with this, that when he explains years down the road to his son why he made those sacrifices and what they ultimately led to, he wants to be able to have that validation. So a very motivated guy. Again, not somebody I think we're going to see a lot of defensively here in the 2020 season, but someone to file away. And if you're kind of wondering, are guys getting fed up and do they feel like they're just practice field fodder? It's not there by any means with Rodney McGraw right now. He might be a reserve at defensive end. He might be looking at some developmental work again when they get back on the practice field. But he reiterated time and time again that coming to Penn State has been the most important decision for him and the best decision for him. So that's something I just wanted to share more from a person perspective than a player perspective. And that's the beautiful thing about this kind of event. We get to peel back the curtain just a little bit, and it doesn't happen all that often.
Yeah, it was a nice element to kind of get to know these guys. There's a lot of conversation with Kalen King and Kobe King about their recruitment, whether or not they were going to, you know, go to the same place no matter what, and kind of what it's like to go to school with your brother. They're still roommates, and they're roommates last year, they're roommates this year. And then on top of that, Jamari Budden and Jalen Reed are some other Michigan guys who were part of this class. There were four guys, the Kings and Jalen Reed from Detroit, Jamari Budden from Ypsilanti, and Kalen King kind of described it as bringing a little bit of home with them to State College. The Kings, they said that living in State College is a little bit different than living in Detroit, but it's a change that they've really enjoyed, and that you know, I think that they kind of knew for a while that they wanted to come to Penn State, and you know, now they're here and they've are taking advantage of, I think, all the opportunities that they have.
One other name I wanted to get to, and he's a name that I think people should familiarize themselves with as being part of the defensive plan for 2022, is Jordan Vandenberg. And what a unique background this guy has. And I think people are starting to hear more about it. And if he finds success at Penn State, I'm sure it's going to be jammed down our throat about his background. But right now, it's still pretty fresh information. And for those who maybe haven't heard about it, he's a guy who joined Penn State last year, late in the process, came with a teammate, a quarterback out of Iowa Western Community College, just wowed the hell out of the staff with the testing numbers he produced, was able to really put together a strong season of film at Iowa Western. He was at Iowa Western for 9 months as a community college situation. All of a sudden, he's on Penn State's roster last year, and he's chasing down Razorbacks, an SEC opponent, in the Outback Bowl. So it was a rapid rise for Jordan Vandenberg, who's going to be a factor at defensive tackle, but is not all that long removed from showing up on a football field and saying, what do I do next? This is a guy who moved from South Africa to the Atlanta, Georgia area at 10 years old. He started playing football in the 10th grade when he was a 5'10", 160-pound-ish receiver. By the time he finished his high school career a couple years later, he was one of the more productive linebackers in the state of Georgia, and yet nothing on the table from a college standpoint. Jordan Vandenberg actually said, well, he had a Division III chance, but there were the SAT scores weren't there to get him into the Division III school. Probably the best thing that ever happened to him was not getting into that Division III school. Maybe he wouldn't have lasted there long and he would have flashed, but maybe he would also be getting ready for his third season at a Division III school right now. So couldn't do that. Iowa Western gave him a walk-on shot, And now here is at Penn State. And I'll tell you what, we've talked a lot about Zane Durant showing up and Hakeem Beamon, who, by the way, Landon Tengwall says is the guy he is most excited to see this season in game action, is Hakeem Beamon. He said he's got Aaron Donald-like hands. So if any of you out there were waiting for the Hakeem Beamon buzz to start brewing again, there it is. We are kicked back off. Get ready. I think we're going to see him back in the fold on September 1st. But, Daniel, I think right now at defensive tackle, this is a guy in Jordan Vandenberg. You've seen him at practice. Motor, 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 all the cliches you want to apply to the situation, but it's accurate because you watch this guy and he just goes and goes and goes, and that's going to get you somewhere on the practice field because clearly he has the athletic intangibles that Penn State is looking for at a defensive tackle profile.
Yeah, I think when you look back at the Outback Bowl and some of the younger guys who got extended chances there with all the opt-outs, I think that Jordan Vandenberg, I think as time goes on, I think he'll be the one who probably previewed the most of what he can offer. It really did feel like there were a couple series during that game where he was just everywhere, constantly in the backfield. And, you know, I think that when you look at him physically, kind of like Zane Durant, they're built, I think, a little differently. But at the same time, that explosiveness is there, that athleticism is there. And I think that it'll be really interesting and really curious to see how that plays against some of these Big Ten offensive lines and if they can bring something a little bit different and maybe how can Jordan Vandenberg complement Hakeem Beamon? How can these guys complement PJ Mustipher? I think that kind of putting the puzzle pieces together on that defensive line, especially in the interior, there's a lot of options, and Jordan Vandenberg is one that maybe slides a little bit more under the radar, considering that last summer he was just kind of here all of a sudden, and he's not someone who had that, the 3-year recruitment where we could all familiarize ourselves with him.
I don't know if he did more than 2 interviews. I think Brian Doan got him. I mean, this guy was like at Iowa Western, all of a sudden surfacing with a couple offers. And then it's like, now I'm enrolled at Penn State and there's no media access. And it was like, well, okay. So I was super excited I hustled over to him on Wednesday because he was the guy I wanted to get to know a little bit better. And I've heard so many strong things from within the building and from some of his teammates about how he has kind of hit the ground running from a really interesting background. And it's not easy to make that leap for guys who were superstars and coveted prospects to show up to campus and be ready. This is a really interesting thing playing out. And another cool aspect of this, and you know well, because you were trying to document eligibility for this roster this week, he's still technically a freshman because his community college experience was under that COVID umbrella. Last year, he didn't play enough games to redshirt. So he's like, still a freshman. I mean, I don't know how old he might be, 20 years old, but you can get a lot of football out of this guy. I don't know how long he'll be at Penn State, but I think starting this year, he's going to be a player that not only, makes some splash moments for them defensively, but that fans are going to actually just gravitate towards and love.
Yeah, his COVID time warp was one of the more interesting ones, going from a sophomore to a redshirt freshman, but that means he's got more time to develop, more time to play football at Penn State. And I think given kind of what we've seen, I think that can only be good for this defense.
All right, Daniel, we'll wrap up with a 5-star mailbag. Happy to have you on for this one. I got a few recruiting notes before we get out of here. But before you get out of here, here's our question. How many of Penn State's May enrollees will become consistent contributors this season? And just to refresh everybody's memory, there were 6 of those early enrollees, Christian Driver and Kim Miller, landing on the roster initially as cornerbacks. We had talked about them having versatility in play as guys in the secondary. Hunter Norzad makes his long-awaited arrival after graduating from Cornell with an engineering degree, now going to be competing to be a starter on the offensive front for Penn State. Tyler Johnson becomes the 4th new addition to the wide receiver room this year. And then you've got Alex Paquetta coming in and the guy that we think the door is wide open for to go out and compete at punter. And the last name here is the top prize at offensive line in Pennsylvania, Drew Shelton, a really impressive tackle prospect who got to campus just last week. So 6 guys. The question is consistent contributors. I think we can both say that means burning redshirt at the very least. Where do you stand on this one?
Yeah, I think the 2 that jumped out to me are Alex Paquetta and Hunter Norzad. Mm-hmm. Paquetta competing with Barney Amore and Gabe Nwosu for the punting job. I think that he comes in with the pedigree and the ability to step in and take that job this fall. And then we know that Penn State needs help on the offensive line, and there's a reason they're bringing in Hunter Norzad as a transfer. And so I think that he'll be in the mix there to compete for a starting job. And then the 2 wild cards are the defensive backs. I think Cam Miller and Christian Driver, we've heard good things about their versatility. We saw last year Penn State rotate some younger defensive backs through and get them onto the field as freshmen. And so I think depending on how things shake out, I think that those are guys that we could see on special teams or, even in certain defensive situations.
Yeah, it doesn't always require a too deep defensive role. We've seen guys just become valuable enough on special teams and valuable enough as backups on defense to validate moving past those four games. But we know the Penn State staff overall, want to be cautious with the eligibility stance, especially if it's a guy who's really on that margin. I think I'm going to go with three as my guess here. I think Drew Shelton, as we project this class out in the next 3-4 years, I mean, he's near the top of my list as guys who could come out the other end of this and have immediate major paydays at the NFL level. But in terms of impacting this team at the tackle position right now in 2022, I think there's a red shirt in his future. I'd be surprised otherwise. And Hunter Norzad, you don't recruit a guy like this at this point in his career after graduation to come in and be a backup. And so you've been selling him the opportunity to come in and be a starter. He'll get that chance. It's going to have to be earned. And maybe it doesn't happen by September 1st. And maybe we see a kind of a competition in play in through the opener and in through September, something that we kind of saw in place last year. And to me, I think Alex Paquetta, who, by the way, has the blessing of Blake Gillikin, which carries a lot of weight around here at the punter position, I think he's going to be in a really good spot. No disrespect to the two walk-ons who came in and competed and worked hard this spring, and Barney and Gabe. But to me, Alex Paquetta, just kind of seeing what he was able to accomplish at the high school level and them getting on him so early, prioritizing getting him in this class, I think he's got a good position to come in, a good landing spot. And I'm curious if he can be a factor in maybe on kickoffs as well. He has some success in that area at the prep level. So that's where my stance is. I think Tyler Johnson, we talked about, there's just too many names at wide receiver right now. And he's coming in after three guys already got to campus in January. Anthony Ivey, by the way, still coming to campus in June. But I think three is the number there. So half of these May guys, if you get more than that, you should be thrilled. But we talked about it before, 12 more players, Daniel, coming in June. So there are guys that are not listed on this roster yet that are going to be factors come September.
Yeah, we talked about how this class of 2021 was a bit of a smaller group, but this class of 2022, it's a lot to keep track of at this point.
It's a large bandwagon. Yeah, you throw in the transfers and Damian Robinson still heading to campus. There's a lot to go through in terms of newcomers. Daniel, always great having you. It's becoming more consistent. I like that. We'll talk to you real soon on the Lions 24/7 podcast. And of course, be sure to follow all Daniel's coverage from coming out of this class of 2021 media day and a lot more over at Lions247.com. All right. Few items on the recruiting trail to get to, and I just want to set the stage by saying next week going to be a huge week at Lions247.com here on the podcast in terms of recruiting and ramping up for the first prospect camp that we're going to be able to cover, I think, since 3 years ago, 2019. So it's been a long time. We're excited to get eyeballs on that. We've got some friends from the 24/7 Sports Network that we think are going to be popping up on campus here during prospect camp season at Penn State that to help with the evaluation and to help kind of get eyeballs on the field. A really impressive showcase coming our way on June 4th, which is next Saturday. Going to be about 75 players, and we're talking about top target kind of players. Some of them have already confirmed their attendance. A couple of notable players that I kind of alluded to last episode, Sid Kaba, Jordan Hall, lineman from the Columbus Kip School. Kaba is a guy with a few Power 5 offers, Duke, West Virginia, among them, Michigan as well. Jordan Hall, though, 6'8", 340 pounds. Those measurements are legit, people. Penn State's his first Power 5 offer. The film from last year did not warrant a strong rating from 24/7 Sports, but the raw data and the valid data on this young man at that position on the offensive front, it garners a long look. And clearly the Nittany Lions want to take a longer look presenting that offer. They're going to get both Kaba and Jordan Hall on campus for that June 4th camp. I was told that by Kaba, who is a 6'3", 260-pound defensive tackle who wants to come out. And what he told me is say he's the next big thing from Columbus, Ohio. So he wants to do that out in Happy Valley for a prospect camp. We're going to have a full preview of that. I think I can also tease this now. our full-time recruiting reporter, will be joining the group next week. Really excited for that. It's one that we've been counting down the days for and kind of just waiting and waiting. And here he comes, and we're excited for that. I'm going to round out our full-time staff here at Lions247.com. You'll hear from him on the podcast. You'll hear from Brian Doan on the podcast next week, and that'll be good because I know he wants to chime in a little bit on Rodney Gallagher, who announced his commitment to West Virginia this week, considered the top wide receiver prospect in the state of Pennsylvania. 30-minute drive to West Virginia. I think that's something that people are starting to pick up a little bit as they see kind of the ramifications of this recruitment. Very close to Morgantown. And there's been a lot of conversation on our message boards about the different dynamics that were in play with this recruitment. But Notre Dame, Penn State ultimately seeing one of their priority targets at receiver end up with the West Virginia Mountaineers. And also at receiver, as Penn State kind of sorts through options, Johnny Shakir, of course, joined the class this month. You heard from Bill Belton, his offensive coordinator at Winslow Township on our last episode. Looking for other help there? Keep an eye on another Texas wide receiver. We've seen them sign Omari Evans last cycle. A couple cycles ago was Parker Washington, who's gone on to have a lot of success. Next name to know at receiver down there in the Lone Star State, Anthony Evans, told me he will use an official visit at Penn State in June. Still working on the exact date there. Looks like it's going to be late June. This is a guy who's one of the faster football talents in the state of Texas, and that's saying something. He didn't exactly light it up in terms of production last year as a receiver, but I think you watch the film, you see what he did on the track this spring. There's a lot to like there. He's also got official visits for June locked into Oklahoma and Georgia. Look, I could go on and on about recruiting. A lot of it on Lions247.com to read through in the coming days. Again, next week, got a lot going on at the site as well. That's going to be it for now. For our producer, Lance Glenn, for my colleague, Daniel Gallen, thanks to Penn State for welcoming us back to the practice field. Thanks to that class of 2021 for giving us some thoughts about their progression and some of their personal development. I'm Tyler Donahue. We'll talk to you next week right here on the Lions247 podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.